Where have you been playing?
I was, let's see, at, I play quite often at Charlotte's Web in Rockford. I've been at the Grace before, and at the Earl of Old Town. And I guess that's about
it. So you're pretty well known in the area.
I hope so.
From your last couple of records, too, which we've been playing Thing at the Nursery Room Window a lot.
Great.
Enjoyed that a lot.
Thank you.
And then the other record was the one you did with Leo Kottke and John Fahey.
Right.
And now you have a new one.
Yeah, I've got a new one on Flying Fish, Like Courageous, the Wolf Dragon. And it was about 2 weeks ago.
Who is Lycurgus?
Let's see. I guess there were three of them. One was a politician, and one was a professional wrestler. I came across the name in an old book on What to Name Your Children from 1898. And it's a Greek word, means a wolf driver. And I thought that was really kind of a weird name. And I came across it again a couple other times. And the particular the one that I used was a mythological character. There were three of them. And he was, he liked to mess around a lot with women. And he chased one of the more powerful guys' wives into the ocean, and she drowned. So to get even with him, he afflicted him with the disease alcoholism. And one night in a drunk stupor, thinking his arms and legs were grapevines, he cut them off.
So that's the story of Lycurgus.
Right. Yeah, I thought it might have been something a little longer, a little more romantic, but he doesn't play a very big part in the Greek mythology.
Do some singing on this album, which
I
haven't heard you sing before.
Well, I haven't. On the Tacoma Records, very few of their artists sing. John Fahey believes that the only people that should be singing are individuals of real strong ethnic voices, like black artists. The example, some of the black blues artists he's done, or have, you know, an operatic trained quality voice, like Robbie Basho. Those that fit somewhere in the nebulous middle land don't sing on the label. On Leo Kottke's Tacoma record, he didn't sing, and of course, John's never sung. Yeah, the same thing happened with me. They're really not too much into their artistry and vocals. It's more like they're more into contemporary instrumental guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So I was liberated a small amount on Flying Fish. I was allowed to sing.
How did you get discovered by Tacoma?
That's a good question. I think I guess I kind of discovered them. I was out in Los Angeles. I moved there in 1967, and I was interested in music at that time, and I started bringing tapes around to some of the labels, which most of them, I guess, are situated in L.A. now. And finally I went to Vanguard, and they said, well, we're not really interested in this kind of stuff. You know, can you do any James Taylor? And I said, no. And I said, well, listen, we used to have an artist on our label who was acoustic guitarist, into acoustic guitar music, and his name's John Fahey, and he's got a company in Santa Monica, which Chad Rivera is living. It was just down the street, it turned out, in a real estate office in the back room. And I took some tapes in there, and they liked it, and pow. That's how I ended up with them.
How long have you been playing?
I've been playing about 16 years, I guess, 17 years. I've been playing professionally, I guess, about 6 years.
Uh-huh. How did you get interested in the guitar?
It's hard to think back quite that far, but I think probably it had something to do with the Kingston Trio. I'm not sure. I think it was Hang Down Your Head, Tom Dooley, and at that point I became addicted. I guess probably with the absurdance of folk music, I started to get an interest in it. And when I was, I guess, 10, my folks bought me a ukulele, and as I got bigger, they bought me something a little bigger, a guitar. I guess that's how it started. Arthur Godfrey, Hawaiian music, I guess.
When did you start finger picking?
I guess probably, I'm not sure, but I would say probably around when I was 14, I started finger picking. I got a record by Pete Seeger called The Folk Singer's Guitar Guide, which was on Folkways Records, and I learned a finger pick from that. I got interested in it. I started listening to people like John Hurt and Dave Van Ronk and Pete Seeger. I switched over to finger picking at that point, and I guess that's, I think that's where I figured it out from that record, yeah. And some other, there were some local artists in Minneapolis, too, a guy named Dave Snickeray and Spider John Kerner, and I spent a lot of time watching them and picked up a lot of things from those folks, too.
How about a tune?
Okay. That's called White Oval Ripoff. That's off the first record, the thing at the nursery room window.
How long have you been writing your own tunes?
I guess now would be just about 11 years. Some of the things that were on the first record were written about, I guess, 1965. Uh-huh. And that would be the first time that I wrote anything. Well, I might have been writing longer than that. I don't know. That's as far long ago as I can remember. Or the first stuff that I've used for performing. So.
You've been performing for about 6 years?
Yeah, professionally.
Did you
start
that out in Minneapolis?
No, I started that out in L.A. I was kind of what would be considered a closet musician. I didn't perform. I was interested in performing, but... I think, you know, to actually get started in it as a single performer is kind of difficult. There's a lot of discomfort involved with it, I think, at first. And some friend who came over to the house where I was going to school in L.A., and he was a performer himself, and he heard me playing upstairs and dragged me along to a show, and I played three songs, the last which I turned around backwards on stage in my chair and played to the PA system and then left the stage and threw up. And from that point on, I started performing occasionally, and he dragged me along to a number of other shows. I got used to it, and that's how I got started. So I was a biology major. I still wonder what I'm doing this. I don't know.
You do this full time?
Yes, I do. I do now.
You have future plans for recording?
Yes, I do. I theoretically owe Tacoma another record, which I may be doing. I was in Los Angeles a couple months ago, and I talked to John Fahey about it. I've got material ready to do another record. I may be doing another one with Flying Fish, too. I'm not sure. I have to talk to Bruce Kaplan about that. There's nothing that's immediate at the moment. It's, I'll just wait and see. I do intend to eventually.
How about another tune?
Okay.
Do another six?
Okay, yeah, that's a good idea. Just, I guess mildly. I guess it's sort of a classical form. I'm not really sure what classical is.
Yeah.
So.
You listen to any classical guitarists?
I do like I like very much like flamenco style guitar, gypsy classical. I've never really gotten that much into classical guitar. I like, for example, I like Julian Bream, but in some cases, classical is almost too sterile. It's so clean, so technically clean, and there isn't a whole lot of feeling in it. Where Southern European classical and flamenco, I guess, or Moorish music there's a lot more spontaneity or kind of a more crispness to it. So I guess that if I do like classical guitar, that's the kind that I do like.
Play Latin open tunings?
Almost exclusively now. I do work some of the material, for example, the blues that I work in, I do that in standard tuning, but I would say most of the things I write now are in open tuning. I think it gives an individual a good deal more liberty with what he's doing. You can get like different kinds of sounds than you'd be able to in a standard tuning. There's already a chord structure built, and it allows in the left hand a lot more freedom to form chord structures and also to work, for example, in harmonics and sliding that you couldn't do, or it'd be a whole lot more difficult to do in a standard guitar tuning.
Almost a richer sound too.
I would definitely say so. It's hard to get like a harmonic, like it's hard to do that in a standard tuning because you have to build a chord structure too. So you do false harmonics, which are generally built on one or two strings versus working the whole thing. So I think get a much richer sound of an open tuning.
You play a 12 in an open tuning too?
Yeah, I still work in standard tuning somewhat. On the 12, it's almost exclusively open tuning now because it's such a pain in the neck to try and tune them up. I very rarely tune the 12 string other than one tuning, which I use, which is D. I work a little more and a good number more tunings on the 6 string than on the 12.
A couple of tracks on the new album have additional musicians on it.
Right. It was a new experience for me. I never played with other musicians, let alone record with them. Minneapolis has got some very good local musicians, and I wanted to try it out and see how it would work. I enjoyed it very much. In what I did, you know, I think it gives it a much fuller sound when you can work with other people. I definitely enjoyed it. Yeah, there was, I guess, dobro, mandolin, fiddle, piano, clarinet. Yeah, it was a real hodgepodge.
A little bit of ragtime.
Yeah, the piano number was a Blind Blake number from the late 20s. A nice song. A lot of good guitar pickers back then. I guess probably that's where finger picking started, was around then with some of the early blues and the black musicians.
Living in Minneapolis now?
Yeah, I am. Whenever I get back there. that's where I'm based now. I moved there about a year and a half ago. I was in Los Angeles. But it's a nice central location.
How much time do you spend touring?
I'd say in the last year, quite a bit. I've got a good agency now, and I've got good management, and they keep me busy. They keep me on the road, and so I would say the better percentage of the time now I'm on the road.
How about another tune?
Okay. Do one off the new album.
Yeah.
Okay.
This one, I think it's the second cut on side two.
Second cut on side two. Wow. I'll do the first cut on side one. Roundworm reel, let's see. I'll tell you, I can't do that one right now. A lot of the material that I've got, they're kind of working revolving sets, and actually I haven't played or practiced that one for quite some time. The album was I wouldn't want to try that one out without that's kind of a difficult piece. The record itself was recorded over a year ago, and it was originally going to be released on Tacoma, and so some of the material there, although it's not it certainly isn't stale, it's I'm not playing some of the material on the record now. Some of my it's so I'm going to have to back off on that one. I'll do that ragtime piece if you want, the one that it was with the clarinet, the Blind Blake song. Okay, I'm going to have to retune here. This will take just a second. This will be in standard tuning. This is kind of interesting song. This isn't actually; these aren't actually the excuse me, the original verses. Some of the verses have been changed because they had various obscenities in them and dealt with things which might be considered under the table. And one, the extra verse, there's an extra verse in this song that's by Ian Buchanan and Dave Van Ronk, and it's by Blind Blake. Well, I met a gal in a cabaret. Was, hey, pretty pop, are you going my way? Wanna know what it's all about? Well, she brought me home just to kick me out. She broke my nose and split my chin. Don't let me catch around here again. Well, it was up in the kitchen and out through the door. She beat me with a chair till my head got sore. That'll never happen no more, no more. Well, that'll never happen no more. That'll never happen no more, no more. Well, that'll never happen no more. I live in San Francisco in the spring and fall. It caused me to wear my overalls. Got sick and it wasn't my fault. I was eating pork chop and leaving the salt. I met a gal in a big man coat. Brand new car and a 40-foot bow. West took a gun and she ripped off my dough. Well, I didn't holler, no, I didn't get sore. That'll never happen no more, no more. Well, that'll never happen no more. That'll never happen no more, no more. Well, that'll never happen no more. I went to a party the other night. I drank some gin, I was a feeling all right. Lit up a reefer and I smoked some gin, waiting around for the fun to begin. When a pretty little lady walked up to me, come on, let's make whoopee. Well, I woke up in an empty bed with nothing in my pocket and a pain in my head. That'll never happen no more, no more. Well, that'll never happen no more. That'll never happen no more, no more. Well, that'll never happen no more. Yes, I do. I can do that. That's going to take a second to tune up on that one, too.
How many different open tunings do you use?
I use, let's see, D, G, C, and then I use derivatives off of them, like D ninth, C ninth, G ninth, and G augmented seventh. And, thank you. Okay, I've got it. No, this is C ninth tuning. Yeah, it's a standard C tuning, which would be C G C G C D instead of C E. Does that sound in tune? Okay.
Sounds like a 12 string at times when you come up and play the unison.
Huh. Yeah, I think open tunings, like 12 string is based on double sets of strings being octaves apart, and in open tunings you get that kind of ringing 12 string sound by the fact that there are that strings are set up in octaves again, like so it tends to fill the sound out quite a bit. It's richer again in the sense of the 12 string is.
Do much improvising?
When I'm occasionally, I guess I end up doing it when I forget where I am. But generally, no. Everything that I do is pretty well figured out in advance. The improvisation would take place, for example, in tempo or speed, or perhaps altering the finger picking patterns a little bit. But it's pretty well set down.
You have a guitar named after you, I hear.
Yes, I do. Yeah, it happens to be this one right here. They're made by a gentleman named Bozo Padanovac, who I guess had his original shop here in Chicago, which is now Wooden Music. And he made this guitar several years ago, and I ended up with it. And he's manufacturing ones that are similar to this now, and he's calling them the Peter Lang model. And he's got a 12 string which he's manufacturing, which is it's a cutaway 12 with inlays and so forth, and that's the Leo Kottke model. So I'm honored to say the least.
Did you design that guitar?
No, this was his design. It's kind of an interesting guitar. It's quite ornate. His guitar designs, the guitars themselves are kind of unique compared with the guitars that are manufactured in this country. The tops are very thick, the bridges are very thick, the saddles are low, and the bracing is outrageous. It's very thick again. A lot of guitar makers and luthiers feel it That is the incorrect way to manufacture a guitar. The top should be thin, the bracing should be thin, and Bozo takes the exact opposite approach. He claims to build the strongest guitars in the world, but they sound good. No one can exactly figure out why. He says that that isn't necessarily true. It's more the woods you use and the style of bracing pattern you use. So the tops are thick. They also have an Eastern European design. They're a little more squared away than an American guitar would be. And when you look at the inlay pattern, for example, it's quite Eastern European. It's I believe he's Serbo-Croatian, or if that's how you pronounce it. He's Hungarian. Yeah, and so he's into ornate inlay patterns. Well, I suppose I could. Since I'm in this tuning, I could. I'll do Toth song. I'll tell you the story behind this particular song. Some of these songs have stories. This particular tune is called Toth song, and Toth was a hippo-faced utility god from the Middle Kingdom of Egypt. He had the face of a hippopotamus and the body of a baboon. And he was a very popular god, a very powerful god. He was a fantastic athlete. He was, I guess, the Joe Namath of that particular time period. As a child, he developed a fantastic sense of balance because over 40% of his body weight was lodged in his head. And he used to fall over quite a bit, so he became adept at balancing. He was walking and running around before the other kids. When he was in college, he was... Was that an earthquake? He was... Wow. He was a 12-letter man in high school and college. Great football player, excellent polo player, and... He was, like I said, a good football player. He was a hard guy to tackle. It's hard to tackle a 54-inch head. When he did get out of school, he ended up working for the Pharaoh. The Pharaoh decided he wanted him on his team, and he made him the god of fertility.
That scratch is scary, man.
It's freaking me out. I'm losing my train of thought. I'll tell you. Yeah, maybe I should just do a song. I'll tell you, I could try that song. I could try the Connecticut Promissory Rag, but I'm not sure I can do it. If you want me to try it, if it turns out bad, we can cut it off the tape. Okay. I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. Yeah, it's a derivation off of C tuning. Let's see, it would be C. Let's see, is that right? C, G, A, G, C, E. So I'm not exactly sure what that would be. It's just with a drop string. Mm-hmm.
Any advice for guitarists who want to learn a finger pick?
Eat right, get plenty of sleep. I guess basically the biggest thing is practicing. The structure of finger picking itself is not actually that difficult. It's more an arpeggio. The difficulties involved are, for example, in timing and I guess dramatic contrast or whatever you want to call it, to get more of a flow, I guess, and that just comes with practice. I really believe that, you know, a lot of people say that some people are more prone to become musicians or so forth, or they're more adept at it. I don't really believe that. I believe it's practice. You know, I believe that if someone wants to finger pick or wants to be a musician, that it just basically takes practice.
You got to do it.
Right. You got to do it. And it's a pain in the neck sometimes. All the time. But... You know, I enjoy it, I do. So.
Yeah, a little bit of time. Want to do a short one?
Should I Let the Old Boy Go? I guess there's certain things you can and can't say on radio. This is a song about flatulence or decrepitation or passing of gas, I guess. I guess I can say it on the radio. Every year, 800 million tons of methane gas are given off from the farts of large animals. And I wrote a little ditty to commemorate that particular fact. I do my part. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
I'm sure the listeners will too.
Great.
Ha ha ha.